and even in the darkness dimly illumined by a few cigarettes, he could recognize the man he had come to see. The pilot wore no cap, so instead of saluting, he inclined his head slightly. He'd never done that before, not to a black, and could not have explained why he did it. "My name is Captain Van Cleef," he said, in English accented in the Afrikaner manner. The African nodded his acknowledgement, his bushy black beard brushing the front of his striped camouflage uniform as he did so. "It's a hazardous night for flying, Captain Van Cleef," he remarked dryly, "and a little late for more supplies." His voice was deep and slow, the accent more like that of an English public schoolman, which he was, than like an African. Van Cleef felt uncomfortable and again, as 100 times during his run through the cloud banks from the coast, asked himself why he'd come. "I didn't bring any supplies, sir. There weren't any more to bring." Another precedent set. He had sworn he would not call the man sir, not a Kaffir. It had just slipped out. But they were right, the other mercenary pilots in the hotel bar in Libreville, the ones who had met him. This one was different.
"Then why have you come?" asked the general softly. "The children, perhaps. There are a number here the nuns would like to fly out to safety, but no more Caritas planes will come in tonight."
Van Cleef shook his head, then realized no one could see the gesture. He was embarrassed and thankful that the darkness hid it. Around him the bodyguards clutched their submachine carbines and stared at him.
"No, I came to collect you. If you want to come, that is."
There was a long silence. He could feel the African staring at him through the gloom, occasionally caught a flash of eye white as one of the attendants raised his cigarette.
"I see. Did your government instruct you to come in here tonight?"
"No,"
said Van Cleef. "It was my idea."
There was another long pause. The bearded head was nodding slowly, in what could have been comprehension or bewilderment.
"I am very grateful," said the voice. "It must have been quite a trip. Actually, I have my own transport, the Constellation, which I hope will be able to take me away to exile."
Van Cleef felt relieved. He had no idea what the political repercussions would have been if he had flown back to Libreville with the general.
"I'll wait till you're off the ground and gone," he said,
and nodded again. He felt like holding out his hand to shake, but did not know whether he ought. If he had but known it, the African general was in the same quandary. So he turned and walked back to his aircraft. There was silence for a while in the group of black men after he had left.
"Why does a South African and an Afrikaner do a thing like that, General?" one of them asked.
There was a flash of teeth as the general smiled briefly.
"I don't think we shall ever understand that," he said.
A match spluttered as another cigarette was lit, the glow setting for a parting instant into sharp relief the faces of the men in the group. At the center was the general, taller than all but two of the guards, heavily built with burly chest and shoulders, distinguishable from others at several 100 yards by the bushy black beard that half the world had come to recognize. In defeat, on the threshold of an exile he knew would be lonely and humiliating, he still commanded. Surrounded by his aides and several ministers, he was, as always, slightly aloof, withdrawn. To be alone is one of the prices of leadership. With him it was also a state of reflex. For 2.5 years, sometimes by sheer force of personality, when there was nothing else to employ, he had kept his millions of people together and fighting against the central federal government. All the experts had told the world they would have to collapse in a few weeks, 2 months at most. The odds were insuperable against them. Somehow they had kept fighting, surrounded, besieged, starving, but defiant. His enemies had refuted his leadership of his people, but few who had been there had any doubts, even in defeat. As his car passed through the last village before the airstrip, the villagers had lined the mud road to chant their loyalty. Hours earlier, at the last meeting of the cabinet, the vote had asked him to leave.